The views and opinions expressed in Cold and Missing are exclusively those of the hosts. All parties mentioned are considered innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Cold and Missing also contains adult themes and languages. Listener discretion is advised.
I'm your host, Allie McLaughlin-Sulkowski.
And I'm your co-host, Eli Sulkowski.
And this is Cold and Missing, where we cover cold cases
and missing person cases.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Cold and Missing. I'm your host, Allie.
And I'm your co-host, Eli. Welcome back, everyone.
At the top, I just always like to say thank you. This past week, we saw a lot of follows on our Instagram page, a lot of sharing, a lot of commenting, a lot of reading and reviewing. So thank you to everyone who's just taken a little bit of time out of their day to show some support for the podcast. We appreciate you so much. The kindness is overwhelming. So thank you so much. But with that, we are on a missing person case this week.
That's right. We are on episode 122. Would you like to get us started?
Yep, let's get into it. So just as a bit of a content warning at the top, this case does involve a young person. Today, we are talking about the missing person case of Maurice Red Jefferson. And this takes place in November of 1983 in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. But first, a little bit about Maurice. Maurice is 16 years old in 1983. He also goes by the nickname Red, given to him because of his striking red hair against his black skin. His mother, Betty Bridges, says, quote, "His color changes with the sun. On a hot day, it looks bright orange in tone. It's really unique," end quote. Maurice is a 10th grader at Dillard High School in Fort Lauderdale. At school, he is known for being soft-spoken and kind. He was part of the ROTC. He held strong religious convictions and had been in his church choir for a long time. He ended up quitting the choir because the rehearsals conflicted with his basketball practice. He loved basketball and was part of the junior varsity team. He had big plans for his life. He wanted to go to medical school and become a doctor. At this time in 1983, Maurice lived with his grandparents on the 200 block of Northwest 30th Terrace in Fort Lauderdale. He lived with his grandparents to finish out high school. Maurice's mother had recently remarried a man who was a pastor of a church in Alabama. So Maurice spent a lot of time in both Florida and Alabama, but his school days were at his grandparents' house. In 1983, Maurice was around 5'11" and 120 pounds. He had his noticeable red hair, but also walked with a distinct bow-legged gait. And now, a timeline of events. On Monday, November 28th, 1983, it started as a typical Monday for Red. He went to school and came home. He took a quick nap on the couch, and when he woke up, he snacked on some popcorn and called a friend from school. He then started to get ready for basketball practice. Maurice is wearing white shorts with a blue stripe, a white shirt, and white sneakers with white tube socks. At around 5:20 p.m., Maurice waves goodbye to his grandmother and starts walking to basketball practice. The walk to practice would have been around 30 minutes. His grandmother did note that Red did leave a little early for practice on that Monday night. He wanted to stop by his girlfriend's house, who lived only a few blocks away from the school. All things considered, he was only leaving 30 minutes earlier than he needed to for practice. So here is where there is some difference in the timeline over the years. Today, when the story is reported, this is the last time that Red was ever seen, leaving his grandmother's house. Back in 1983, however, there were some different details that came out in the reporting that will come out through the timeline. So back to that Monday evening, it's unclear exactly when Maurice's family realized that something was wrong. What is reported is that when his family went to police that night, they were told that police guidelines meant that they would not start investigating until he had been missing for at least 3 days. This would mean that the police started their investigation into Maurice's disappearance on Thursday, December 1st, 3 days after he was last seen. One of the first places they check is to see if Maurice is with his biological father who lived in the area, but he's not there. Police start to look into if Red could have been a runaway, but nothing points to that. Everything that he owned was left in his room, including his wallet, which he had left sitting on the TV after school. Also, Maurice didn't have any history of running away, and there was nothing going on in his life that would cause him to run. On Friday, December 2nd, so he has been missing for 4 days now, police start going door to door to talk to neighbors to see if they saw anything on that Monday night. It's during this canvassing that police find two teenage girls who tell them that they saw Maurice at Franklin Park shooting baskets with some younger kids on Monday night. They believe it was around 7 p.m. They say they saw two men pull up in a blue and white Oldsmobile. One of the men in the car offered Maurice a ride, but when he refused the offer, the two men forced him into the car and sped away. It's at this point that police start treating his case as an abduction. Over the weekend, friends, family, and teammates spend the weekend hanging up missing person posters for Red all over Fort Lauderdale. His mother is lost for words. Betty says, quote, "We can't understand what happened. Maurice didn't have an enemy in the world. It doesn't make any sense," end quote. His mother also can't believe that no one has seen him due to his distinct red hair. Police ask the FBI to get involved in the case. They quickly agree, but almost as quickly pull out of the investigation. They say that they're able to find a witness who says that they saw Maurice a few hours after he was reportedly seen being forced into the Oldsmobile. Because of this, the FBI does not believe an abduction took place, and therefore they should not be involved in the case. The days turn into weeks, and 1983 rolls into 1984. By the end of January 1984, so Maurice has been missing for 2 months at this point, police have no leads in the case. The family at this point has hired a private investigator to help them in their search, but he also hasn't turned up any leads. The PI says, quote, "If I had to make a guess, I'd say foul play is the answer. Maybe the world came crashing down on his shoulders and he just took off. If it's not that, then yes, I would have to assume that he is dead," end quote. His family, however, stays optimistic that Red will come home. They keep 3 Bibles open at their homes at all times, showing that they have not closed the book on Maurice. They do believe firmly, though, that if Maurice had the ability to call them, he would have by now. He would not go this long without talking to his family. After this, the case truly seems to go cold. The next update I could find is in August of 1985, so Maurice has been missing for almost 2 years at this point. On August 8th of 1985, the family celebrates Red's 18th birthday. His mother says, quote, "We haven't stopped looking for him, and we want to hear him," end quote. Investigators assigned to his case say that they are no closer to finding him than they were when he first went missing. Throughout the rest of the 80s and the 90s, Maurice's missing person poster will appear in newspapers from time to time. When it is listed, he is shown as a non-family abduction. But it's here that we start seeing his last known whereabouts as leaving for basketball practice. Slowly over the years, the story of him being forced into a car will fall out of the narrative. It's unclear if police have officially ruled this out, that it didn't happen, or if it's just a detail that has kind of been lost in the reporting over the years. In 2009, so it's been over 25 years since Red vanished, local media coverage is drummed up when a small film company announces that they want to make a documentary about his case. To date, it doesn't appear that the film has been released, or not anywhere that I could find. Red's grandmother is still alive at this time, and she still hopes to know what happened to Maurice. She says, quote, "I've always said it's like the earth opened up and swallowed him. What happened to him? We don't know," end quote. She says that she has lived in the same house with the same phone number since 1983, so that if Maurice ever needed to reach out or could reach out, he would know exactly how to get a hold of his family. But that is truly all we know about the disappearance of Maurice Red Jefferson. If you know anything about the disappearance of Maurice Red Jefferson in November of 1983, or his whereabouts today, please call the Broward County Sheriff's Office at 954-321-4735. So that is the case of Maurice Red Jefferson.
I just want to start off my response with commenting on what a dedicated, steadfast young man he sounded like. It sounded like, you know, he had goals that he wanted to reach and was really trying to move his life forward. Him having red hair and having the nickname Red is something that's very familiar to me because I also have red hair, and that was a nickname, continues to be a nickname of mine. And when you do have red hair, it is something that's consistently notable about you, and that's very clear here too. And I did see the pictures of him now, and I'm excited for our listeners to see them in the graphics. But I love that in all areas of his life, he was very committed to everything that he did, even having to choose between, you know, singing and basketball and landing in basketball. I just enjoyed hearing how motivated he was.
Yeah, he was a young man who just had really big dreams and goals. And I feel this way, you know, about every missing person case. But, you know, especially here, this feels like an instance where it's like, what a remarkable person that, you know, vanished. And it's like we all have lost out because he did not get to reach these goals or, you know, wherever his life was going to take him. It seems like we all missed out on his impact because of something that happened in 1983.
Yeah, the way he went missing, it stands out because it really does seem like he vanished or was plucked from the Earth's surface. Mm-hmm. I have so many more questions that I know can't be answered within this moment about this case, but I do think it's very important to continue to ask those questions when people who are related to this person are still alive in this case. You know, I think that there are answers out there. So I'm eager to ask you these questions. My first one being, how was that the law back in 1983 where it needed to be 3 days for a minor? Like, I just want to hear more about that on your end. Maybe you know more, but that was shocking.
It's shocking. I couldn't believe. I've never heard of 3 days waiting period. I've heard of a 24-hour waiting period, but never have I heard of 3 days, especially for a 16-year-old. So that was shocking. And I feel like we would be remiss to not think that there could be racism playing into this with a Black family coming to the police looking for, you know, a teenager and them kind of brushing it off for 3 days. I don't know if that really was the guidelines. I tried to research and try to find other instances of it, but I couldn't pull anything up. That doesn't mean it's not there. It's just I couldn't find exactly what I was looking for without access to old records and things that just aren't online. So I don't know, but that is what the family says that they were told. And that is bonkers to me.
Yeah. And to continue on the narrative that I also think is true, that he is not a runaway, to give that some more validity, people don't leave their things behind when they're trying to run away. I think it's different if they are fleeing an environment, but that means you're usually fleeing an emergency situation, and that simply was not the case here. To call this a runaway when all of his things were left behind, when he was waving goodbye as he was leaving, is wrong. I don't know. It didn't make sense to me how that narrative even came up when it so clearly was not the case.
Yeah, you know, it almost felt like to me that like investigators at the time were like kind of scrambling. Like they knew they had like really messed up waiting 3 days. Like they find these witnesses that say they saw an abduction, which I know brings up its own questions, but you know, he didn't show up again. Runaways usually would have surfaced anyway by 3 days. He's not at his dad's house. He's not anywhere that he should be, you know, no relative's house, no friend's houses. And then they hear this, these two teenage girls' stories. So it's like, I think they like really kind of scrambled quickly to try to reverse time, try to get a lead. But like the trail really seemed like it had already gone cold by the time they had started investigating.
Yeah, and what that scrambling led to was the FBI coming in and then backing out. And that right there was really, really unfortunate because they were accessing resources that could have really been helpful in this case, but the FBI had nothing to work on. But still, them choosing to not advocate for this missing person or lean in a little bit more is confusing to me. Granted, this was so many years ago, and I don't know what was going on at the time, but it also seemed like an odd choice to me for them to back out of continuing to investigate.
Yeah, and that kind of brings us around to the witnesses, these two teenage girls that say they saw a blue and white Oldsmobile pull up, offer Maurice a ride, and when he refused, they forced him into the car. So the FBI says they found a witness who says that a few hours after that event was supposed to have happened, they did see Maurice. We never get any details of where he was seen, what his condition was like, what any circumstance was around that. We just hear that that's what they found, so they don't believe that an abduction took place from that. So that's the FBI. But then it gets us back to the two teenage girls. So what happened there? Did police rule that story out? Has it ever been able to be ruled out officially? It brings up a ton of questions and kind of feels like, you know, a key piece. Like, is this part of the narrative or not? And police, to my knowledge, have never come out and said one way or the other.
Yeah, I mean, one of the last things I wrote down as I was listening to you discuss the timeline was that it seems like to me details like this should not be muddled when there are so few. This was one area where there was a lot of detail about the possibility of what happened to him, and it was just dropped.
Yeah, as I've mentioned over the years, this possible abduction, that detail, these witnesses, it gets dropped. They don't talk about it, you know, in 2009, 2005, there were some articles, and they don't necessarily talk about this abduction. So I don't know if it has been ruled out officially, but his case is labeled as a non-family abduction. So that is still how the police seem to be handling his case.
Hearing the last detail about his grandmother and that, you know, she lives in the same house, has the same number. It's such an echo of how the loved ones of a missing person, their lives stand still the moment they go missing. And I could really feel that. And just you reading that simple statement of fact, like she lives in the same house, has the same number, something about that, while it can be very beautiful, in this case, it felt like she stood still in time and is just waiting for him to come home. And with this case being in the 80s, I don't think time has to stand still for these people anymore. I think that this case is solvable.
Yeah, I really hope for the family that they are able to bring Red home, that they're able to get answers in this. You know, I know his mom still advocates very fiercely for his case. So I really hope that we're able to get momentum on his case and get the answers that we're looking for, because I do feel like they're out there. There's more here. There's more details. There's more to be uncovered in this case. So again, if you know anything about the disappearance of Maurice Red Jefferson in November of 1983 or his whereabouts today, please call the Broward County Sheriff's Office at 954-321-4735. So we will have pictures of Maurice on our Instagram. You'll see his striking red hair, and there's also a few age progressions of what he would look like into his 30s and 40s, so more of what he would look like today. So if you want to see those, please check them out. Please share them in your communities. Get his name out there, get his case out there, get his picture out there so we can get some more coverage for Red. Again, thank you so much to everyone who has rated and reviewed us these past few weeks. We appreciate it so much. And now that I can see all the international reviews, I am overwhelmed by how many places are listening and how many countries getting these stories out there. So thank you so much for listening, for sharing, for telling people about this podcast. It is so appreciative. And you know, there's a lot going on in the world. There's a lot going on in everybody's lives at all times. So just the fact that you're taking a minute to talk about the podcast or to write something about it, it means the world. And it's very thoughtful. So thank you. And we will also have up on our website, www.coldandmissing.com. We have all our old episodes on there. You can rate and review us there as well. Or if you want to reach out to us, you can do that there. And we also have transcripts. So if you or someone you love is hard of hearing, you can follow along with the podcast there as well. But that is all I have for you this week. Thank you so much for listening to Cold and Missing. I'm your host, Allie.
And I'm your co-host, Eli.
Have a good week and stay safe, y'all.
Stay safe, y'all.